explaining how he was bitten by a jock.
Well, that's the thing, is it was just ironic that this guy who is really indirectly responsible for having putting millions of people into thinking about sharks in a very negative way, got bit by a shark himself. And shark bites are tremendously rare. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. More people get struck by lightning than got bitten by sharks, you know. And he's one of the guys that got bitten by a shark. So it's ironic, you know. That
well, anyhow, then I try to turn it on about thinking about his own life, you know, when he was making something. And then about after 20 minutes, I found out that my tape was not running. Then I said, oh, very nice. Look, I just found out my tape is not running. I said, why do you think it's nice? I said, because now I don't need to follow that line of thought. Right. I can start new.
That's good.
then we had some more discussion about half an hour or so. And then at the end, I recited my AP news. And he was good. He was being so much angry with me. Because I explained slowly about, you know, what he is doing and about the American scene. And then he ran away.
That's it, huh?
And then a few days later, I phoned. I wanted to speak to that, what is his name? Aykroyd or something like this. He made this Blues Brothers movie, a very lasting movie.
Oh, yeah. You mean the director of the movie?
Aykroyd, is his name?
No, it's not. See, let me think. Damn, I just saw it the other night. Lansing.
Yes, there was one.
Land something.
But, well, anyhow.
Well, that's one of the guys anyway. I mean, that's, there are several people involved in making the movie, but I'm talking about the director. John Landis.
Yes, it's Landis, but he was not there. This was the actor. His name is Aykroyd or something.
You're talking about one of the actors?
Yes.
Well,
one of the actors was
John Belushi,
Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. I know him. He's good.
Yes.
He's a friend.
And then what did these stupid people do? They said, well, you have no permission to come to us anymore. you are forbidden to enter our houses.
Oh, you must have been at Universal. Universal, right? At Universal Studios? Yeah.
No, but it has been printed, so I think he started thinking about all that now. The most interesting thing was that he said, well, I'm feeling too much flying. And then I asked him, do you know that people, he's flying, it's a magical mystery tour. And then he started from magical mystery tour. Oh my goodness, what is this now? The eternal scene is coming to catch me. And then when I went downstairs, I got to the elevator. And he was running after me, but he had to go to the airport very quickly. Now he was seeing that I'm standing on the elevator. There was no second one. Now, to face me for 2 minutes or 1 minute in the elevator alone, this was too much for him. So he ran down the staircase. And by the way, when he came downstairs, by chance, my elevator also came downstairs.
I
went outside.
There you
were. I saw him again, just coming facing me. And then I said, listen, man, walking is like flying.
Right.
So it was very nice.
You don't know what you're going to bump into.
I like him, I mean, because he's man, and I like men, I like human beings.
Yeah, sure. He must be okay.
But anyhow, it's so that's my only request about this taping.
Where are you from?
Very interesting question. I was starting.
I mean, right now. I mean, currently.
It's not about time, you know.
Oh well.
I'm just coming from the bar, but recently we have been in Frankfurt.
Oh, I see Frankfurt. Heidelberg is a nice place.
We wanted to try to give you the possibility to play on the radio.
The Heiligenberg up there?
Yes.
We visited up there.
Yeah, and the mayor didn't have any permission.
No, we've asked, we've tried, we even tried it before in 72.
Yeah.
We visited there in 72
and
went up there to look around and the Tinkerstetter.
Good memory.
Yeah. It's an interesting spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Very powerful. Spot of power. And it's interesting that. It's just part of. The esoteric life of Germany, you know, which is an interesting place for that.
Germany, right.
A lot of power has been pumped into that place.
Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Monk monastery.
Right, I'm certain we couldn't hurt it any.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to play there. Yeah, well, that's always been a fantasy of ours, you know, to play. But that's why we played at the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
Same sense, really.
A few days after you played there, I went to the station in Frankfurt and there was a guy standing there with some very strange head. And then I started to talk to him and said, I'm in trouble, I cannot get my uncle and I don't know where to stay. So I took him along to one head shop and made him rest there. And then he came next day to my house and explained to me that he had been in Palestine and he came from Egypt somewhere. He must have been at this spot when you had been there.
Yeah.
He was telling some, it was long ago, 8 years ago or so, so I don't know, I don't remember the details, but it was quite some incident. He just came from that trip and so there has been always some kind of line, and then it was very, very amused in a certain way, in a positive way, when you made this. Amused, not the right word. I was very much. I liked it. Huh?
Yeah.
I found it very lovely. Huh? Mm-hmm. When you made booze for Allah.
Ah, glad you liked it.
Because you know, I'm Muslim. Huh?
It was very. Oh, good.
Yes, no fanatic, because there's much problems about Islam. Real Islam is peace and love, and you know the basic idea of life is nice thinking and nice developing and evolution
right.
for everybody without discrimination of anything.
Yeah, I think
but
I,
these people, these mullah, they...
Well, it's the same problem with Christianity,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody takes too small of a viewpoint and, well, you know, I mean, it's a very human problem.
Mm. Did you meet Dylan after he...
Sure, I just, in fact, not about a month and a half, about 2 months ago, I played with him.
Oh, he's still thinking
on
about...
on stage, he was touring, He invited me to come down to the theater and play, and so I came down and played about a set with him. And I had a great time, and he's just fine, you know. It's his Christian thing I didn't ask him about, and he didn't volunteer anything to me about it, but the people that he's traveling with are also Christians like himself, and I guess, and I feel that, I mean, my feeling is that he's entitled to go through his changes, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You don't know what he will do. After one, maybe he changed for something else.
Well, I don't see him, although his experience, his Christian experience is very much a part of the current charismatic Christianity thing, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Which is... really,
rebirth.
That is to say that he's experienced what he feels is direct contact with Jesus, you know.
With Jesus?
Yeah.
Not God. He's regarding Jesus.
Just
God.
Jesus. Well, I don't know, you know, whether,
any of the
what, you know, I don't know what the refinements are therein, but that spirit which is called Jesus, you know. It's a strange thing. I mean, I don't really know what to make of it. And the only thing that it's hard for me to accept about on any level about that whole idea is just the exclusivity, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That you're only right if you're a Christian, you know what I mean? I don't like that way of thinking.
I don't like
that exclusive.
But I think what you moan at is that the idea of unity, which is comprising everything. Huh? That this is limited to a certain idea.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Huh.
You know,
but it does not mean that there's a level existing which is available for everything.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
You're a philosopher.
Well, my feeling is that...
You understand my point?
It can only be that everything that is, you know, I mean, you know, I don't think it's right to, I don't think that somebody can say consciously that just by virtue of an idea, they are more right than something else is, you know.
What do you mean, the different levels of reality and different ideas? leading to certain conclusions.
Well, I see, yeah, I think a certain amount of the whole religious battling, you know, that goes on, the religious wars, so to speak, are fundamentally...
The exchange of patterns instead of living something.
Yeah, and they're not so much, and they're it's like religion has a tendency to exclude things from reality, you know what I mean? It's like the only reason you could find it possible to, the only reason that, like a religious reason to do away with someone, you know, is like the reason you can do that, you can accept that idea is because they don't exist properly, you know what I mean? Like to a Christian, a non-Christian is like a non-person, you know, or not part of reality. You know what I mean? It's the kind of thinking that all religions have. They want to command reality on some level. You know.
Jim Morrison was one.
I think it's too small. It's just too small for me. Those ideas are just too small for me.
I try to understand. Jim Morrison was once doing a song. It started and it's still in my mind due to certain reasons.
Yeah.
Hello, I love you. Won't you tell me your name? Hello, I love you. Let me drop in your game. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Yeah.
I think this shows something about the development of consciousness amongst Western people. The idea this idea of sharing, like Ram Dass, for example, he always says, "I'm sharing with you." He's not saying follow the path or do this or that, but I'm sharing with you experience.
Yeah,
isn't it? And this way of
I think that's helpful. You know, I mean, I think that's that is no inclusive. Pressure to, you know, whatever includes the most is going to get my vote. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Whatever includes everybody, everything. You know, it's just that. You know, whatever it is, like biological wisdom, whatever organic wisdom there is that makes us who we are. You know, I mean, whatever it is that operates on that level is not mincing words. You know what I mean? It's not our ideas that make us real. You know, I mean, it's no matter what we think, we still have what nature has given us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Our cells, our blood. Goes through our veins, our hearts beat, we breathe, you know, we live, you know, and it's not by virtue of our ideas, it's not what we think that modifies that in any real way.
This idea that we shouldn't think longer that we stay in that room, but we should be in the room.
Well, that would be good, but I, you know, then on the other hand, it leaves you with... here's this complex apparatus, consciousness, consciousness, which is very complex. It's a complex idea. And why, I mean, life clearly wants to have more to it than just to exist. I mean, if the all, you know, the all wanted to develop just something that would live and didn't care whether it thought or not, you know what I mean?
You mean that the existence of people should be accepted?
Well, more than that, I mean, I think there's more to it than that, but I don't know what it is, you know. I mean, I'll say this, that I don't have an answer, you know, I don't have answers. These are questions of mine, you know.
Do you know Conference of the Birds? Did you read it?
Pardon me?
Conference of the Birds.
No, I haven't read it.
I should get a copy for you. It's an English translation available, and a lot of people have done music on it also.
Oh, really? Whose work is it?
Actually, it's a work of an Islamic mystic.
Oh,
from
I see.
The 11th century.
Oh, too much.
And it is describing the journey of the birds who were looking for their hidden king, Zimurgh.
Uh-huh.
And so they are gathering, and each bird is trying to excuse himself that he cannot go on the walk on the path. One says, "Oh look, I got my family here," and the other says, "This and that."
Right.
So and then they are electing, so to say, the peacock. No, not the peacock. The
whooping crane.
No, not crane. Hickhack. No, what is his name? Wigwag. No. Wigwag.
Wigwag? What kind of bird? Is it a bird?
It is bird, yes.
What kind of bird? I mean,
bird.
Big bird, little bird,
well,
small bird?
I've seen
bird.
It in India many times. I could find out if I...
you find out what things are going on. Hello?
Beautiful.
Yeah,
let's do that.
Sometime in the next day or so. Yeah, okay. Okay, thanks, Brent. Bye-bye.
Well, maybe Wagtail or... I can't remember. Anyhow, I'll send you a copy, inshallah, maybe.
Yeah, do that. That would be great.
And the point is, they are talking... there's not discussion. But he is by means of anecdotes, small stories,
right.
And so he's just giving some very love stories.
There's
different degrees of love.
Uh-huh. Huh? Right.
And then they are starting to walk, and then they are walking through the different valleys. Valley of search, and valley of love, and valley of understanding, valley of detachment. And very of death of call, mm-hmm. and very of bewilderment, and so on, until they reach to the court.
Oh, sounds neat.
It's very beautiful. Oh. I mean, because all little stories, only half page, one page.
Right.
Very deep thought stories.
Ah,
one story just comes to my mind. It is that a beggar or just a man. He is in the sand, in the desert, and he is digging. And the king is passing by, and he is looking, seeing that man digging. So he is taking off his golden bangle and throwing it to the dust.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So after 1 week or 1 day or so, the king is coming again, and still that beggar is searching. Still the beggar is digging.
Yeah.
So the king is asking, "Fool, what are you doing here? Didn't you? Are you not satisfied?" Huh? And then the beggar says, "King, yesterday you threw down your bangle, and now I have found it, and this makes me so much thirsty for more that I cannot stop digging anymore."
Amazing. That's a good story. That's rather like those, there's a lot of Sufi stories.
Yes. Been
translated. Idris Shah.
Yes.
Well,
he himself, he has collected a lot.
It's the collections that count.
The collections are nice. Yes.
Yeah, I like the collections. I like any of those teaching stories. They're, they always contain wisdom, and they're it's a beautiful form. Yeah. A little short story, the parable or the tale.
One story comes to my mind also from this Mullah Nasruddin stories. Maybe also it's containing something with death. Therefore, I'm telling.
Yeah.
Because we have this proverb, actually, this is regarded to be a word of the Prophet, of the Holy Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah.
And it says, "Die before you die."
Mm-hmm.
Before that kind of death which finishes your body,
yeah.
You could detach from materialism and egoism and such kind of things.
I go for that.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a useful idea.
Yeah. So that story is dealing with that point. That man, he's called Nasruddin. He's a jokey figure. I don't know, like.
Well, I've heard that name.
Oh, you have heard
that? Sure,
it.
Yeah.
And he,
I've been exposed to something of that stuff, yeah.
He is staying in his house, and suddenly he says to his wife, "Look, I think I'm dead." Then his wife said, "Oh, you are a fool. How you can think that you are dead? Look, your hands are warm." He said, "Oh yes, you're right, my hands are warm, so I'm not dead." Then after some time, he thinks to go in the wood and to cut some wood, for the fire or something. He goes to the wood, and as it is very cold, outside, so after some time of wood cutting, he finds out that his hands are cold.
Right.
So he thinks, "Oh, now I'm dead." He's lying down, because dead people are not working.
Gotcha.
He's lying down on the ground. Then he's just thinking that he's dead, and suddenly some wolves are coming.
Ah.
And they're attacking his pony.
Ah.
And he's facing the situation. And so he is getting up from his lying down and saying to the wolves, "You foolish wolves, if I would be alive, I would beat you."
<That's amazing. laughs>
this different types of you know, this
development. I like that, yeah, right. Little changes of consciousness about the same idea, same point of view.
Exactly.
Good stuff.
I was in Kadian, it's a very nice place in India, near the Pakistani border. My wife is from there, and I have very much love for their town. It's a very beautiful town. It's really, for me, it's such an amazing town, because when the subcontinent was divided, the Muslims had to leave the country.
Yes.
And was such a butchering there on all the sides.
That's what I understand.
Was horrible.
Yeah.
And our movement, they are keeping apart from Christians because they have nothing to do with such violence and beating and so on. But they had to go, they had to leave, and only some 313 Dervish stayed there to keep the places safe. I mean, our holy places there,
uh-huh.
mosques and ethnic graveyard. And
right.
And now then all these Hindus and these Sikhs and the different, you know, Sikhs is
sure.
the term, they then entered the houses there and they took property and everything and they lived there. It was a very dangerous time.
Uh-huh.
And nowadays it is like this, and this is very strange, that for example, that when the gurus of the Sikhs, birthday,
sure.
then they are starting chanting at night. And on three different, what do you call it, pujaras or something, they have these temples. Then the whole night long they are reciting.
Right.
By loudspeaker, not in the, by loudspeaker. That whole in the town you can listen. And then some, by chance, the Hindu people also celebrate certain things. For example, one Hindu says, well, I got some boy also, I'll give you 100 rupees, and then you, whole night long you make this chanting.
Gotcha.
So then they gather people, and then they start also. Whole night long, from the sunset up to the morning.
Sikhs and Hindus.
And so it is like a clash. I mean, if you stay there for some time, you are getting crazy. You think, what is this metal town? All the sounds are going boo, boo, from all sides. And the peace which is developed when the people are living in that kind of atmosphere without troubling each other.
Yeah, well, it can
very
be done.
Strange. Very strange.
It can be done. It's unusual, but it can be done. I don't see any reason why not. Yeah, I have a few friends who are Sikhs, who are converted, you know, who become Sikhs.
Often that the COH or what it is.
Well,
well,
it's the same. Basically, let's see if I can remember who their teacher is. What his name is, the guru. Yogi Bhajan. Hello? Nothing.
And I stayed there two and a half months, from December to February. And, oh my goodness.
It's a flaw. Hello? Hey. Yeah, I would like to. I'm talking to some people right now, but yeah, I would like to do that. I'd like to see if I can get them to take a look at this thing on my lip and see if it's anything serious. Yeah, that's what I heard. I know, that's amazingly great. That'd be great. Sure. Okay. Bye bye. One of the guys in the band has a friend who's a doctor, who's a dermatologist, who just happens to be here in Essen, practicing here in Essen.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was in England here at the hotel I was staying at, I picked up this weird, you know, this thing here, which is, I had some. It isn't very serious, it doesn't hurt or anything like that. It's some kind of weird rash. I think I got it from the hotel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just got it overnight. It was there the day before yesterday. I didn't have it, and then yesterday I had it, you know, and we came here. And it's just, so it just happens that he's got a friend here who's a doctor, just totally coincidentally, and he happens to be not above that. I mean, he's a dermatologist, skin doctor to boot, so it's kind of, you know, sort of a lucky coincidence there.
Synchronicity. Yeah, right, synchronicity.
We were just exactly talking about that, that point. Of course, you must have that question trigger. And
oh, yeah, sure. Right.
I've gone through that, and well, just for the point of talking, I mean, not talking like small talk, but
it's fun.
Notice that. No, what I'm thinking is that it is really like this. If you develop a certain you, huh?
Yeah.
If you look in certain directions, such things happen. Numberless. Huh?
If you just arrive, if you just because, know this, you realize there's endless coincidence.
You have turned on your mind like this, and then it must happen again and again.
Oh, it does.
Like,
well,
it must happen here, no?
It happens all the time. It happens everywhere. Yeah, right.
But there's nothing about it. Nothing strange about it.
No, I don't think so.
Just your own, you know.
Well, it's everything that's in your mind is connected. You know, everything that's in your mind is in your mind, you know, so it's all connected. I mean, obviously, so it's really a matter of seeing the connections, and Robert Anton Wilson is having this, he's having a meeting with his own consciousness is what he's really talking about. He's saying, this is how my mind connects these elements, you know, I mean, that's what I read, you know, but above all, the best thing about, actually, that I like most about, like, the cosmic trigger of his stuff is that it's got a wonderful bibliography. A great reading list in there, you know. I mean, there's a lot of good. I read some amazing books that he mentions briefly in passing in the Cosmic Trigger.
Mm.
It has become for me a very good source book, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It's
what I found for this source book was Rothbard by Hillebrand.
Yeah, sure, that's another one.
Isn't
of those.
It great?
Yes, it is great. Yeah, it is great. And so that also is.
Yeah,
I like anybody who spends their time synthesizing elements, you know, bringing them together, all kinds of elements. And it gives you places to start, you know, and to go looking for your own resonance in your own life and stuff like that, you know. I read it, there's an amazing book which he mentions, in fact, in his Cosmic Trigger book, it's toward the end, it's one of the last chapters, he mentions this book by the McKenna brothers, a book called The Invisible Landscape that talks about the big countdown. He calls it the big countdown of events. Yeah, when things come to a big peak in 2012. In 2012, which is about 30 years from now. It's an amazing book. The book that he would talk, the book called The Invisible Landscape, is just, boy, it is, because these two guys are serious Western hard scientists, you know, like really hard scientists, physicists, anthropologists, ethnobotanists. Yeah, I mean, these guys are serious, and they had that experience of going into the upper Amazon basin to do some experiments with psychedelics because of a theory which they had that had to do with an effect of tryptamines, and they have a model of tryptamines where their model is something along these lines, that the tryptamines, the way they interact with consciousness is that there is a donor electron pair in a tryptamine molecule which attaches to a receptor pair of molecules at the bottom of the DNA molecule and causes them to spin and unravel and do this sort of thing, you know, sort of sets them into oscillation. They call that effect electron spin resonance, which is something that's known about. And they were talking about this one particular hallucinogen, or one particular tryptamine, that produces a muscular mutation in your mouth and face muscles that makes it possible for you to produce visible airwaves, visible sound waves, in other words. Yeah, very far out shit. And so their thing was that they were going to go into the jungle, you know, and take this tryptamine and make an effort to, by producing visible sound waves and duplicating the electron spin resonance, the sound which you hear when you take tryptamines, a high-pitched nervous system sound, it appears inside your head, really. By duplicating that sound, they were hoping to create an exterior, visible
hologram of an idea. Yeah, very much, very far out thinking, you know. And so in this book, I mean, they spent about half this book, you know, describing the nature of the science part of what it is they're trying to do, and a certain amount of the philosophical background. They have lots and lots of chapters of hard science. For the first half of the book is devoted to that. Then they talk about what happened to them when they tried this experiment. What happened was they went completely off into the zone. They both felt that they were in the presence of a futuristic sort of insectile anthropologist from the future, or from hyper time. So from other time.
Yeah.
That was giving them sort of instructions about what to pursue in their work. And that led them into a study of the I Ching. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the second half of the book, they talk about the I Ching, and they talk about the I Ching as a calendrical, a calendar. Wave and time. And their view is really, what they've done in this book is made an effort to describe what they consider the universe or reality to be, which is really an interaction between the mind, you know, and the universe, which is really not a place, but a time, but a moment. And in that moment in time, which is moving along, we're moving along in time, as it goes along, as it unravels in time, it's like, it is a fundamentally the existence of a universe, or the curve of a universe, is something that unravels in time. It's not a place or a thing. It's an event, and the event is gains stuff. They describe them as quanta. Mm-hmm. They describe, like, one quanta, for example, is the conversion of the gaseous primordial Big Bang, you know, post Big Bang moment to solid material is one quanta. From there to the appearance of life is another quanta. From the appearance of life to vertebrates is another quanta. From vertebrates to language is a quanta. See, and each one is happening in half the time. I mean, each half time is accelerating, and it's accelerating at the rate of at a exponential curve to the 64th power.
Oh wow!
Which is quite, you know, quite a curve. At the end, it gets pretty extreme, and we're in the last 300 year cycle, we're in the last of a 40 year cycle. Mm-hmm. We're at right. That comes right after a 300-year cycle, after a several thousand-year cycle, after so on and so on.
Yeah.
You know, so we're entering into the final spin, which they say is happening, going to happen in 2012. And in this book, they not only talk about it, but they prove it. You know, I mean, and they're very rigorous about. They make a very definite effort to communicate clearly to the reader what it is they're trying to say. It's a hell of a book. I mean, it's certainly one of the most significant books I've read yet. I mean, if you believe it. You know,
Invisible Landscape.
It's called The Invisible Landscape. You can't get it anywhere. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
You can't get it anywhere. Some teeny-weeny publishing company in New York published it.
Yeah.
You might be able to find it, you know, in a catalog.
Yeah.
And look, it's well worth hunting for. And, you know, maybe there are some copies around that can be got. It's definitely worth trying to get. When I finally found the publisher, I quickly ordered 4 or 5 copies and gave a few to my friends who would be most interested, and kept a few around. You know, so it's like I know of the existence of a couple of copies of this book. You know, I've talked to people for years now, for a couple of years, about this book, because it's truly one of the most remarkable pieces of work I've seen. And see, this experiment of theirs in the Amazon jungle, this happened back in 1970. And they've been working basically ever since then on these ideas, you know, and that this book is the publication of their work.
Do you mean it is that type of expanding level which comprises most of what you have seen? Because it's I've read that Cosmic Trigger, and
Right. Well, he describes the book. He describes that one chapter. He really describes more or less their model of what's going to happen.
Only what I'm
briefly, but he doesn't go into much detail.
What I'm thinking, and what is my experience also, it is quite possible that with a certain effort you might prove this or that.
Yeah.
And I could imagine that if you find some. Other scientists who are just on some other line of thought, and then they prove a different thing.
Oh yeah, I just think, I mean, yeah, oh, no, I don't, you know, it's, I don't subscribe to one theory over another, you know, I mean.
It's just fascinating you.
It is, right, it's very interesting.
The model is quite interested in the model.
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah. Oh, great. And Bill's got his doctor friend here who's going to come up and visit me in about a half hour, I guess. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah? Far out. Oh, far out. Out of sight. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, everything is working out fine for me.
I've got the gift for you.
A gift?
If you take it. If you don't take it, it's okay.
Right. Oh, too much. I'll take it.
It's my pattern, huh?
That word, that's a good word.
Because what I'm thinking is, if man is doing something, it must be limited. Because man,
oh, yeah.
At the utmost, could be...
man is only man.
Yes. And though his way of selecting might be due to certain attachments. And
it's always limited, but yes. I like...
Unless you're not yourself.
Yeah, I'm always encouraged.
This is what I was saying to Pete Townsend. Therefore, I wanted to cite you your poem. You remember when I started?
Go ahead, yeah, please do.
But I have no tune for it, and I don't want to sing it because it is not a... It's not a poem, actually. It is kind of... how you say it, limerick or riddle
right.
Or such, you know, such type of Once Upon a Time song. So.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I just started it, I just wrote it down on the bar.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time, I met the Who. And I asked Peter, tell me, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, think you're really who am I? I said, ask Allah, who stood life for questions why?
Mm-hmm.
It really happened. It is no poem. It is truth.
Right,
I just went to see him and I just asked him, "Are you really yourself?"
Yes.
So he was amazed. He didn't know what to say.
Well, it's one of those things. What can you say?
No, I like him because you know, why shouldn't I like him? But it's just a matter of I was sold later on by the design, my man who makes this motivation tomorrow. Could you call it moderation in English? No, talk show, talk master, or what, how do you call it?
Yeah, that's good, moderation, I understand. Yeah, that's a good word.
So, he told me that when he came, when this Mr. Townsend, when he came from the plane, and he was like in the icy atmosphere. There was nobody approaching him.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was seeing him, and so he must have been too much, cooled.
Yeah, that can happen. I don't get that kind of.
It's very, very difficult.
No, I don't get that kind of stuff. It's probably difficult for him. It's not difficult for me. I mean, I don't. I'm not isolated by.
You're enjoying it.
I'm not famous. I'm not that famous. You know.
Probably,
what I mean? I'm just famous enough.
We were sitting down, and that moderator, I called him moderator, he was saying, oh, are you dead? Are you, what is that?
Are you dead?
Are you dead? I answered, oh, well, my name is Adagila. Anyhow, actually, I only came to talk to you. This interview thing, you know, that's not my point, it's not my work. I'm not... I'm a journalist. And
you're a visitor, is what you are.
Yes, I feel like a stranger.
Me too. I am a stranger.
Do you know, by the way, this saying, I mean, I listen very well to your Go to Heaven record, this idea of being a stranger, it is actually a mystical proverb in Islam.
Yeah.
You know this?
Yeah.
From the Sufis, that you live like a stranger in the world. Eh?
Yeah.
We are in this world, but not from this world.
Right, we're not, right, we're in this world, not of it. Right.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right. Well, that's, I mean, that seems obvious, doesn't it?
No, that's very, very difficult to do.
It's kind of hard to help. Well, it depends on what society you're in, too. I mean, it depends on how you're moving through. It depends on how you're moving through it. You know, like for us, our experience as the Grateful Dead, you know, the Grateful Dead has been a very specific kind of experience for us. Mm. It's really been kind of been far out, frankly, you know.
Mm.
It's just put us in a position of kind of being perpendicular to almost everything, you know what I mean? We're sort of, we're coming in at a peculiar angle to almost every experience we bump into. And so it's just in the course of traveling, you know, we're a little bit outside of everything. It's very strange, you know. But it's made, I mean, that has only made us more ourselves, you know. That's the effect that it has, it seems to have, and
You know, this, when in 1976, something like, no, 67, there was this Andy Warhol's Velvet Underground, you might have seen or heard this record. There was a song of a German girl, actually, her name is the same like his, Nicole.
Nicole.
And she sang a song, I'll Be Your Mirror. You know that song?
What's the song?
I'll Be Your Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
I'll Be Your Mirror.
I'll Be Your Mirror.
Right.
And when I was 1 year or 2 years after living in one house, I was writing this line, huh? Actually on a mirror, huh?
Yeah,
now in our kitchen,
mirror.
We had so many people living in our house, and they, we were living in their house, whatever it is.
Right.
So I wrote it. And then an American GI who was dropout, and he was a good friend of mine, he came and he saw that line, and he looked very punishing to me. And he took a lipstick or something like this, and he wrote very big letters, punk, on it. Punk.
Punk?
Punk, on that line. And now, more than 5 years afterwards, I found out that this idea of mirror is actually also a word of the Holy Prophet. Of Islam.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. He said that a believer is a mirror of his believer, of his friend. So it's very strange how certain realities...
Metaphors.
If you make it your nature, it is a kind of reality.
Yeah, I guess they are kind of realities, I guess.
If it is not an experience like this, that you say, oh, God, this experience is very nice, and now let me see what is else, what I turn on the second program, or third program, or whatever. Like Dan Dess is doing this in his performances.
Oh, really?
You have never seen
him? I haven't seen him lately.
He's doing that, he's starting to talk, now you turn on your second level, and now you turn on your third level.
Oh, I see.
Like this, he is just making his... his way of expanding his mind, he's demonstrating it by giving the experience of it in a certain way, by explaining the different levels of life, that such kind of a dead chair is a chair actually, but then after some time you find out that it might not be a chair, it might be a throne for you, because you feel like king, and then after some time it might be like a hump of arms. You are feeling too much biting. So it is developing according to your humbleness,
right.
According to the way of accepting.
How many levels you have
reality.
Access to? Yeah, right. Accepting your all encompassing nature. Yeah, that's a good one. That would be good.
I wrote a very nice story in that place, just to tune you in that atmosphere. I first sing a song for you, which I also wrote in that town, and just to give you some idea. Kadian, you town of Elvishes, you are so near to me. Kadian, you town of loving ones, You are so dear to me. And where I'll go, it will be Qadian. And where I'll be, it will be in Quran. And where I'll be, it will be in Quran. And where I'll go, it will be Qadian. And then some long loving verses, I think.
Yeah.
And in that town, which I'm, many songs I had written about the town. Uh-huh. I was running through the streets. I was weeping. I could not.
Yeah.
It was too much interesting. The first time when I when I was there and making an English line, English poem.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was. Islam is my desire, to pray this is my creed. I walk into the fire, over a seated creed. Muhammad is al-Hadi, and he is all papers. He testifies al-Mahdi, who brought the faith to earth. I found my love in Rabbah, Allah gave me iman. My heart is making sajda, I'll die in Qadian. Where is my journey ending, if not in being lost? In Allah who is sending his love to us, my God. And there's some words. Rabwa is the town of our people in Pakistan, and Qadian is the town in India. They're divided.
Ah,
so I'm saying I'm running between these two towns, like a lover who is coming to a bride and he is falling in love with that bride, and then the bride says, do you like to see a more beautiful girl? I say yes. Then she says, you go to my sister. And then I go to her sister, and she's more beautiful. And then she says, oh, do you like to see a more beautiful girl? I say yes. And then he is sending me to her sister, and then I'm coming again to that girl, and she's like this, and going between these two towns.
Amazing. Amazing.
And there I wrote one story. Now I just wanted to, if you don't mind, this, when I wrote that last line, when it was coming to my mind, slowly, and I was running to the street, and I tried to sing it, and I started weeping. Because there is a gathering of about 200,000 people, and I had to recite it there, some poem of mine. And then I was thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so much in love with that, Allah, I'm so much in love with the town that I cannot keep it for me. I have to weep. How can I recite it for 200,000 people?
Oh, geez, you can recite it. Well, that's the perfect moment. You know, that's the moment. That's the truth. You know, that's what you would hope to be able to recite whenever you could recite. You know?
And then for 3 days I was running with that, pregnant with that song, and then after all I was able to do.
That's a lovely. That's
you
lovely.
You can keep it if you like.
I'll scarcely remember it, but I'll remember the idea. Yeah.